I think we're on, Robert.
Yeah. I think we are. So yeah. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
Yeah, and I'm Judy Nathan somewhere in the corner, but I know you see me. I just, screens, you know, whatever.
Yeah, we're all living remote now. Yeah. We might as well be off in the wilderness.
Yeah.
So it's actually 14 days now. Until the presidential election.
I know.
I did have to say it only to say that, you know, if we stay on schedule.
And you can still register to vote. I think it's later. It's till Saturday.
I think it's this Saturday. Yes. Yep. Yeah.
Can you do it online?
You can. I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think I would rather do it a little more directly to make sure it's all done in time.
If you have a driver's license, you might be able
to. Yeah. If all goes well, our next shows will actually be on election day. So we'll all be nervous.
That.
And
I know. It's like
crazy.
I can handle that, but I'll have CNN going on in the background there. But
I can now say that I did vote. I cast my ballot, my mail-in ballot. I dropped it in the box over at City Hall Annex.
Oh, I did too. That one. Yeah.
Yeah. And I did that last Friday. It was recorded yesterday as having been received and all's well with the world.
I should go look mine up because I did the same day. I went Friday.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great feature that Secretary of State's office put into play. That, you know, because there is always some concern about mail delivery, and this is very reassuring to know that got there.
I wish all the states could have something like us. I mean, really.
Yeah. I mean, I never had any real doubt that it would get processed, but the thing is that still, you know, we all get a little neurotic about these things. So, you know. So it goes. So anyways, that's 14 days from now. And again, I don't think we should dwell on it, national politics or anything like that. But
no, I can't. You know, it's too depressing.
There's one thing I would say about it, though, which is that I went for a walk in Cambridgeport this past weekend.
Yeah.
And I was chatting with somebody who was selling some paintings from a gentleman who had passed away recently.
Right. Kathy Susie's house.
Yeah. And I was looking at all these paintings that we sort of had these Americana type themes.
Yes.
And I was thinking, I don't know how it got me to thinking about it, but, you know, if the election goes the way many of us hope it will, and we will actually be experiencing a post-Trump era, hopefully, come January. You know, there's one point of view that basically says, well, okay, now it'll be our turn. But there's another point of view, which is I would liken it to kind of like a post-war mindset.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, will people across the country, Republican, Democrat, you know, urban, rural, whatever, maybe we all will say, man, we've been through a pretty tough war here. Maybe it's time to sort of get it together and kind of rediscover a little piece of what made America great.
You're very optimistic. That is like the most Pollyannish thing I've ever heard. I can't believe that from you. I mean,
that's kind of how I look at the world,
it's
though.
It's like right out of that movie. What's the one with James Stewart? You know,
It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah. I mean, come on. I mean, I would love to think that, but I watch a lot more cable stuff than you do because I get HBO and I get all the documentaries and I see, you know, like Axios and all these great things. And they interview people that are Trump supporters and they're from all over the country. And these people are so, these people, see, I'm even saying it, these people, but there's no common ground there. I don't see it.
Well, one of the things that
he's done amazing things. Where?
One of the things that I was pointing out to somebody earlier today was that, in 2016, there were many people, I think most mainstream Republicans had no use for Mr. Trump. He was actually there. He had the highest disapproval ratings amongst Republicans.
Robert, they hired Fusion. They were the first people to hire Fusion to investigate him. People forget.
Right.
And the
right. So here's my point is that, in other words, if the very same people who didn't have much use for him 4 years later had use for him, my assumption is they're just as fickle today as they were 4 years ago.
Well, then,
and within
those are
a few
the
months.
Yeah, but those are the politicians. They'll but change into a dime. I know that.
I think a lot of people will basically, not everybody, there'll be the crazy people, the militia people, but
they're going to be disappointed. But there's a lot of those people.
But people will get over it and then they will say, you know, come on, maybe maybe this is okay, and we'll see how it goes. And I just hope that if enough people believe that in fact maybe good things can come of this in the end.
Well, if enough people, all we need is okay, I don't want to talk about this anymore except this. Biden has to win by at least 6 to 8 percentage points over for it not to be contested.
I agree.
It can't be like last time. That's too close.
But let's also be clear that, in fact, it's still state-by-state races. So he has to have some reasonably clear margins.
Right. He's got to win. He's got to have Michigan back and Wisconsin.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm a little disturbed about what I've been hearing the last few days about voter suppression. And I'm not the person who... I'm not real knee-jerky about this, but the thing is that some of what I've been seeing is actually a little weird, you know. You know, I would really hate to see people in the last minute basically pulling out the stops to monkey wrench every possible voting option for people.
They won't allow people one ballot box drop off in a county of 4 million people.
I know that's crazy.
Harris County.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
We have what? Yeah. How many do we have in our 7 square miles? Whatever.
About 5, I think. Yeah, maybe.
Oh, more. Yeah. I mean, and they have one for it's 100 square. It's crazy.
I know. You know. So anyway, okay, what'll happen will happen. I will be at peace regardless. I've kind of brought myself to that point.
I appreciate your optimism.
Other thing is coming up on the ballot this 2 weeks from today. And of course, for some of us who've already voted, it's already happened. But, you know, there are these couple of ballot questions.
Yes.
Question one had to do with so-called right to repair.
Right.
And the other one had to do with ranked choice voting. And as many, I don't think anybody watching this program or this recording will be surprised to learn that people call me about this a lot. You know, I had an interview with a reporter yesterday about this. And, you know, people actually do have, I don't think it's as complicated a proposal as some make it out to be. But one thing that is a bit of a confusion is that people are likening this to Cambridge's proportional representation elections. It is not. And I have to keep setting people straight, saying, look, both use ranked ballots, and yes, there are transferable votes, but the thing is, they're very, very different outcomes.
Right.
One is to elect a single person, and ranked choice voting, as proposed in this initiative petition, is really all about addressing the problem of spoilers, so that you don't have somebody failing, who basically the only way they get elected
vote and then they get in, or something.
Yeah, and because all the votes amongst other candidates are split. I mean, you do even have a very real perverse possibility under the current system to have multiple candidates who share a particular political majority viewpoint splitting their votes so effectively that the minority viewpoint wins the election.
Right.
And this is a system that would, in principle, address that, I think, pretty effectively. Cambridge's system is about electing a multi-member body that is proportionally, at least more or less, based on how you look at the world, proportionally representative of the electorate. That's a very, very different thing. But I think it was inevitable that people will say, foolishly say things like, oh, ranked choice? Isn't that crazy system they use in Cambridge? You know, so inevitably the phone calls happen and you know, I have to explain these things to people. Yeah. So anyway, I voted yes on both.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. And, the right to repair, which there was something similar a few years ago.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, So what happens often with initiative petitions is that in the closing week, so we're really in that crunch time right now, people save up their dimes for the big push for big mailings.
Oh, I've gotten two about that one. Yeah.
Yeah. And what typically then happens is the greatest amount of misinformation will appear late in the game because there's no time to respond.
It's the vote no people because they have the money. It's the corporate, it's the more... I don't know.
Yeah, I think that, it's an interesting phenomenon that all sides of these, I don't know about question one, but I don't like even ranked choice voting, you know, it's not like all the money is just bubbling up from the grassroots here. I mean, some of it is coming from some pretty big players too, you know.
The one on the right of refute or whatever, that's more to me the bigger players.
Yeah. But, you know, it's actually been kind of gratifying to see some familiar faces like from Sullivan Taya doing an ad, you know, in favor of voting for question one, saying you should have a right to prepare and it shouldn't just be the big guys. And,
right. You
know, so it's, you know, I don't know. I will. My instincts tell me both of these questions will pass, but I don't know that for sure. Anyway, so that's definitely, in the offing for the next couple of weeks here, you know, so. I think it's reasonably fair to say that voter turnout will probably, save for the problem of voter suppression in some states. Yeah. My guess is that we're going to break some serious records in terms of voter turnout.
Yeah, I hope so. And I hope it's all for good.
Yeah, I mean, I think that when you get higher voter turnout, you in theory get more representative votes of what the country is really about. And I want to believe that the country is a pretty together place, and we'll see. And hopefully that will be borne out.
But again, we have the Electoral College, I think, just messes stuff up. I don't think it's a fair system. I just don't.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate how it came to be, and there was some wisdom. Remember, in the early days, nobody actually was even there was no popular vote. You know, many times in many states, the electors you elected your state legislature, and they chose the electors.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, so it was as indirect as you can get. You know, so we're better than that, than we have a popular vote. But then, of course, once we sort of moved toward a true popular vote. It's kind of system, then the absurdity of the Electoral College started to be borne out, I think, as a result.
And also, you know, the appointment of the electors is up to a state legislature, isn't it? That's what I think today about whether how far this could go, and they could actually disband the current electors and elect their own if there's a dispute. I don't know. It sounded really crazy.
In which case, we go to the Supreme Court, in which case the Supreme Court becomes a big issue, right?
Let's move on.
Yeah.
We're back.
So actually, let's get a little local here.
Yeah, let's go beyond the ballot. Okay, good.
Right. So, we did have another Cambridge City Council meeting yesterday.
Because there was a holiday last week, right?
Yeah. Last week, right. And, there's some weeks where the agenda is just full of like big, 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 crazy items, and other weeks where it's just almost kind of funny to read. I would actually say that yesterday's was a little more on the funny to read side. Really? You know, there wasn't anything pivotal. There was nothing major coming before them to be ordained. There was nothing great controversy, except for the one that was made subject to the charter right at the previous meeting, having to do with neighborhood conservation districts,
right?
Which I found that to be a rather interesting conversation, both within the council, but even more significantly on the various listservs and elsewhere around Cambridge.
Yes,
you know, plenty of misinformation to go around.
I brought up Suzanne Blier's opinion whatever in Cambridge Day, which was quite lengthy and I thought quite well researched, but you feel like both sides are playing. I don't think it's equal in this sense. I
agree with you. I actually think that the research that was put up by Suzanne Blier is a little closer to the truth. But you know, the thing is if you look at it, there's sort of something kind of just under the surface here, which I find disturbing. You know, last fall we had a municipal election where there were, you know, where the sort of the political power players were the existing group called the Better Cambridge or ABC. And then Suzanne Blier was sort of at the heart of creating this other one called Cambridge Citizens Coalition, ABC versus CCC, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting that, in fact, who were the main people who were speaking out in favor of the city council order that was essentially, regardless of the specific words, it was calling into question the legitimacy and appropriateness of neighborhood conservation districts, right?
Come out now.
But the thing is, so on the one hand, you have Suzanne Blier, who's kind of at the head of the CCC group, But then the people who were primarily writing blog posts and elsewhere were people who are closely affiliated with the ABC group.
Right.
So in many ways, I saw this as sort of like a proxy war between two camps.
Like the old AHO, I mean, not the old, but the AHO argument was also like.
That's right. You know, so people are just getting into these sort of political pissing wars here. But what I find disturbing really is that, I mean, I've been around a while. I've been paying attention for 30 some odd years. And I know, I remember the genesis of some of these neighborhood conservation districts.
What's the last one to be given to be done in Cambridge?
You know, I couldn't say chronologically. I remember when there was a marsh district. There's a half crown marsh district. One was established.
Pretty newer.
Mid Cambridge happened while in my time here. Mid Cambridge Neighborhood Conservation District, or was we just rattle off rapidly the MCNCDC, right? but the thing is that. It just seems to me, and oh, by the way, the rhetoric around this has now gone way past just the legitimacy of neighborhood conservation districts, but the legitimacy of neighborhood associations. Oh, they're not representative either and whatever. And sometimes that's true. And sometimes that's spectacularly not true.
Can you quickly, because I think I've got confused with the conservation district versus an historical district, which is more restrictive, the historical district, right?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, but even still, in the end, it's not like there's tremendous power associated with these, but there is a review process. You can slow something down.
But enforcement, historical, there's more enforcement of what things look like. And so I don't know about conservation.
I think that's right.
About it, though. I really don't. So.
Yeah. I mean, my sense, again, I'm not reading from the letter of the law here, but the way neighborhood conservation districts are established basically gives you a review process.
Right.
So that, you know, if something is proposed, you know, you sort of have to go through and then maybe you can hammer out and come up with something more acceptable, better.
And that's what's being done now, right?
Well, I mean, the thing is that not all neighborhood conservation districts are exactly the same. Certain things are prioritized and in some and not in others, you know.
Yeah.
But what I'm finding very interesting is this, it's almost like a revisionist history of Cambridge being played out by people who really weren't there and don't know, you know, yet, you know, that they're sort of trying to gather friends and sort of say, listen to me. No, I've got the right point of view. I'm telling you, these people don't know. They weren't there and they don't really know the history. And, you know, you can read and research and write papers about all of this stuff here, but you have to sort of have been there. I mean, I'll give you one example for the Mid-Cambridge Neighborhood Conservation District.
Okay.
What was happening with Genesis was that was not, as some people are alleging, a bold-faced attempt to increase property values. That was not the issue at all. It was never even discussed. It was nothing.
Yeah.
What was happening in Cambridge was that there were places like, for example, along Harvard Street, where there had been these kind of beautiful old mansard-type buildings, you know, with reasonably large lots. And as you know, as the world changed and these families with 13 kids were no longer there, the things weren't matching up very well. So some of them were becoming like flop houses, rooming house, legally or illegally. And what happened is somebody said, well, we can do something with these properties. So they were tearing down these grand buildings and putting up what some people refer to as Arlington salt boxes, basically crap. And people said, that's not a good outcome. You know, we need to change that. So they established the Mid-Cambridge Neighborhood Conservation District. And the net result of that was that many of those buildings that might otherwise have just been torn down were preserved.
Okay.
They were divided up into condos. And then there was additional, because the lot was sufficient that you could build in the backyard and you could you could build it out and add more condos. So you had the front building and the new construction as well.
More housing.
So if you, and a lot more housing. But the thing is, if you look all around Mid-Cambridge, you'll find many of these projects on all sorts of streets that were all put through the review process. And that was not done to make the properties more valuable. It was just done to make the street, or at least preserve the streetscape and some of the kind of the beauty of some of these areas architectural integrity. I thought it was a good thing, and it's still a good thing.
I mean, who was it? Was it Heather Hoffman in comment that something about looking at that this would make prices go up. All of Cambridge is gone. You can't find a part of Cambridge that is affordable in terms of buying something. It's ridiculous.
So that's she nailed it. Honestly, yeah. Heather nailed it there. The thing is that it is obvious. It is so obvious that the reason why prices have been going up, and whether for rental or for sale, is due to much greater forces than whether somebody decided to create a neighborhood conservation district.
I mean, it's just crazy.
The fact that people were even putting that out there, and you know what it was based on, is that some fool in the write-up when they were proposing this district in East Cambridge just happened to, I think they were probably trying to sell it to the property owners going, this won't hurt you. I assure you, this will make your property more valuable. Yeah. Well, and then that got put out there as the narrative that this is being proposed to increase your property price. Right. I just thought that is the stupidest interpretation I have heard in 30 years.
If anything, that's an area of the city. If you go down there and you see these big market luxury, big, you know, developments, you see the Kendall Square. Yes, let's preserve some of those smaller houses. If that's what it takes, let's do it. I mean, it's just
crazy. Yes. No, I think it's really true. And, you know, there are many of us who actually kind of like the look and feel. I have actually, to be perfectly honest, at least two parts of the city I've always envied because they had a kind of a real strong neighborhood feel.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, sometimes some blocks of mid-Cambridge have that where I live, but some blocks like mine don't really have that feel. Yeah. So I have always envied some certain parts of North Cambridge.
Yeah.
And a big, big piece of East Cambridge. All you have to do is go down to some of the Italian festivals in East Cambridge, that corny as they may be, and you say, you know, this is really a living place. Yeah. You know, and I would love to see those little two-family houses preserved where, you know, the old Italian gentleman is growing tomatoes in the yard and has a great barber. You see that all over that. And, you know, I want to preserve that.
But what about the whole, so the order that was proposed was to include renter. I mean, that was confusing too. So,
you know, I don't think anybody's going to argue that if people are talking about the preservation of neighbors, that when the word goes out about meetings and the word goes out about anything, that it should be just a broad outreach to anyone and everyone. You know, but I think that sort of the hidden message, which wasn't so hidden here, is somehow just because some change in some property might cause rents to go up one way or the other, even if there are other forces far greater causing rents to go up, that somehow some people should have some plebiscite to be able to sort of tell a property owner, you know, that we're not going to allow that because there's a possibility that rents might be marginally increased as a result of this. And I thought, well, that's kind of crazy. And so, you know, to me, inclusiveness is one thing, but somehow, you know, creating any kind of system where you know, not even a current tenant, but, you know, even a future tenant can come in here and say that, you know, that you're choosing to do this change to your property here is somehow going to make it harder for me to find an apartment 3 years from now, and that therefore I have to stop you from doing it, is a little weird to me.
Yeah.
You know?
So the next step is that it goes to the normal planning board and to the... No, they're studying it. It's a study, right?
Yeah.
It's studying it. Okay.
Right. But, you know, the thing is, we're in a kind of a psychotic period right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm sorry, but I have to put it at the doorstep of the ABC people, which is sort of the, you know, build higher, taller, denser. And if anybody stands in my way, I'm going to savage you in social media.
Who's living in those buildings, in those taller, denser places?
Transients in many times. Yeah. I mean, the thing is that some of these ones that are end up being, you know, kind of high rent buildings, whatever, are sort of an okay place for the short term, but then people are there while they're looking for others. I mean, that's a bigger problem in places like out in the Alewife area, by the way, you know, which is sort of, I sometimes rather savagely refer to that as the motel district of Cambridge.
I
mean, if you come to Cambridge because you got to have a job in let's say Kendall Square, and you're looking for a place to live, you might find a place in, you know, one of these developments, but then you say to yourself, this isn't really a neighborhood. I don't like this. So while you're there, you're looking for someplace else. So a year later, you're signing a lease or buying a condo somewhere else.
And they do. Do those have inclusionary units? The ones that are rentals?
They should. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So the thing is that that's, and to be perfectly truthful, I think the inclusionary units are probably will end up being the more stable tenancies.
Yeah, but that's what, 10 out of 20 out of 100. I mean,
it'll be, well, it'll be in under the, in the new regime, it'll be 25%.
It certainly won't be very, I like the whole mixed income thing, but that's me. I don't, you know.
Well, and I still am of the feeling that I still think it can be true too, is that those two family homes owned by actual people can and should be maintained as, and not just two families, but three families, four families, really the well from which a lot of housing that is just naturally affordable flows. Yeah. You know, because, you know, you got a good relationship with the landlord doesn't raise the rent, and, you know.
Even if the rent is equivalent to that other building that has an elevator and all these things, you want to live where, a lot of people want to live in a house. You know, they want to live with the yard. They want to live, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly true. Yeah. So I think, you know, so anyway, I just think the conversation that seems to be going on is the wrong conversation.
So that, okay. And so I think Carlone voted present on that or no?
Yeah, he voted, I think, present on that. And that was, so he was the sole vote. But, you know, the thing is that this is, you know, this is more, you know, a city council order is not a big binding thing. It's sort of more like, okay, go ahead.
But, right. Go,
Look into this, get some more information, knock yourself out, you know. So that's, you know, that's the lot of it really. So anyway, it was a big deal though, you know?
Yeah. All right. We have about half a minute less to take a break. So we'll go to, we'll discuss in the next segment, some other things, right?
That's exactly right. Primarily city council. But the thing is, there are a few other things I wouldn't mind touching on as well.
Well,
a golf course. Exactly. So, you know, so anyway, we'll see. Right. And.